It's time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, 13th of May, the day after Mother's Day, and we're going to have a Mother's Day special. If you guys remember on Father's Day, a while back, we did Mitch Kider and his three sons. So if you remember that old TV series, Mitch and My Three Sons, so we did it on that theme. It was so much fun. Then also, we did Jason Maldiano and his mom when we did a Mother's Day. That was a couple years ago. That still gets a lot of play. Today, we have two Mother Day special interviews that we're excited to share with you. Both stories are just so precious. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But it's good to have you with us, joining us on the podcast. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. We're also proud to be a part of the industry syndicate. Our guest today, Jason Frazier, started that with a group of gentlemen. We're honored to be in at the beginning of that. Excited to have that affiliation and partnership. So check it out, industrysyndicate.com. That MBA secondary conference in New York, man, flying out on Sunday morning. Going to be there next week. Looking forward to seeing many of our listeners there. If you're there and you're looking for a meeting for me, text me, 512-632-2900, and we'll definitely get a meeting set up. You know how it goes. You get yourself super scheduled during these things. So if you want a meeting, let's schedule it sooner than later. So today we have in the Hot Topic segment, Marcia Davies, Chief Operating Officer and founder of Empower with the Mortgage Bankers Association of MBA, along with her daughter, Emily Davies, who is with Freddie Mac. You can hear them and their roles, responsibility. Emily is Senior Client Relationship Manager in the Office of the Client. She does a great job there. You'll enjoy that interview, along with Jason Frazier and his mom, Marilyn Richardson, who's President and CEO of Mason McDuffie Mortgage, one of the top 100 mortgage companies in America. And also, as one of the first to break the glass ceiling and get into the CEO slot, back when it was a lot more difficult. Marilyn's got a great story, and then you listen to Jason, who's been big in technology and how he came in it. He's an award-winning marketeer, podcaster, as you know, with the Industry Syndicate. So you're going to enjoy both these interviews. If you don't have time to listen to them live all day, all through the day, then you can go to our website, Lickin' on Lending. You listen to each one of them, and I encourage you to do so and download them. They're just really good. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Black Knight. In this today's competitive market, it's critical for lenders to deliver decision quality business intelligence right to the employees at the right time. The answer to this demand is Black Knight's product, which they have developed. It's called Actionable Intelligence Platform, to deliver data that drives growth and reduces costs. And to learn about this intelligent platform, I encourage you to go over to blackknightinc.com. Also, Open Mortgage, the leading buyer of reverse mortgage loans and the home of the top LOs in the country. Check them out at openmortgage.com. Also, Finastra, Fusion Mortgage Bot solution, automatically addresses many of the compliance issues, delivering enhanced borrower satisfaction. And they really have this mobile app. I keep talking about it. It's a very powerful tool, and many of the community bankers that we're talking to at the conferences are using it and having great success. Then also, our newest sponsor, United Bank, headquartered in Connecticut. Their warehouse lending division is joining us, Ken Jones, and one of our regular listeners, Jim Harrison, left and just joined up with them in the warehouse division. And we're so glad to have their sponsorship. Jim said, hey, if you want to get the word out what we're doing, we need to get on that Lickin' on Lending podcast. Jim, thank you so much for championing this. And then also for Ken and the whole Bank United team, we're excited to have them. We had the launch call last week. Very excited about them having them here with us. But if you're looking for a warehouse lender, check out our website. We're going to have all their information up there shortly. But United Bank got a hold of Jim Harrison. Many of you know who he is, as well as Ken Jones, and there's the rest of the team we'll be introducing shortly. Also, a special thank you to Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these co-ops create competitive advantages for their lender members as well as the vendor members. I mean, we both are there working together up close personal. It's a great relationship. And then Velma, which is an efficient mortgage marketing email platform, as well as KnowledgeCoup, providing easy and fun training for mortgage lenders, and Vidyard, an online video platform for businesses, allows you to communicate internally with LOs, have underwriters communicate out to borrowers, as well as providing a lot of information that was, you know, quite honestly poorly communicated or communicated in such a way where it left a lot of ambiguity. What did you mean when you said that you wanted this or that and it was a conditional loan? This eliminates it. If you start using video platforming and video messaging, I encourage you to check it out. We can help you walk you through it. That's some of the consulting we're working on. And also, special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe for their contributions to this podcast each and every week. Alice cannot join us today. She got pulled into a meeting at the last minute. And Alan, bless his heart, is doing a webinar for me right now with one of our partners. And he's doing that with Lenders One. So he's got all of their people on a webinar. So anyway, let's get over to the MBA Mortgage Minute and listen to what Rob Van Rapphorst has for us.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHA announced its long-awaited proposed revisions to the certifications and defect taxonomy. These changes are being proposed in an effort to give additional clarity and to streamline FHA program requirements while continuing to fulfill FHA's duty to protect the Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund. FHA is seeking public feedback on these programs, specifically to its loan-level certifications, annual lender certifications, and the defect taxonomy. Also last week, the House Committees on Financial Services and Veterans Affairs passed the Protect Affordable Mortgages for Veterans Act of 2019. The bipartisan bill would correct a legislative drafting error that prevented VA-guaranteed orphaned loans from being eligible for Ginnie Mae pooling. And finally, we saw a good week for the spring home buying season as a 5% increase in purchase applications, both weekly and year over year, drove the results. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good job, Rob. Good to see some apps going up. All our clients are saying they've never been, I mean, I don't know if they've never been busier, but they certainly are busier than first quarter. Profits are up, rates are down, even some increase in refinances. And you know, when you look at ways in which you could communicate out to your customer base, texting is going to be such an effective way to do so. And that's why I keep coming back to this digital business card, telling everyone about how you tell your story. Do you tell your story over the phone, it's one and done, or can you record it, put it into an app, see what I'm doing with my business card on the Lincoln & Lending website, click on it, sign up for it, share your digital business card, and see where it goes. It goes viral. When it does, it's pretty cool how you can see who's logging in, what they're looking at, and really gives you insights and intelligence in helping provide better services to them and what they're specifically to their interests. Let's get over to Les Parker with the macro view of the markets with his TM Spotlight. Les, what you got?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by LoanLogix, like a true national trade. They were born to be wise. Trade talks climb and die. They never won a die. Wild trades followed tweets with waves of selling and buying. Mortgage market participants pay attention to the dollar, China, central bank policies, and Iran, a nuclear weapons state wannabe. China-dependent countries might not embrace the wild trade talk ride. Think South Korea, Germany, Taiwan, and Australia. Maybe they weren't born to be wild. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Yeah, good music parody. We that's music from our generation, Andy and Joe. That's a good one. Joe, good to have you with us, friend, and with this fine week. So what's going on in the market? I've been so busy with some accounting stuff. Can't wait to talk to Andy about that. this stuff is, it's, I haven't had a chance to check out the markets, but I heard there was a bit of a,
well, don't.
A 30 base.
Don't look at it. Huh? Don't look.
If you're worried about stocks, down over almost 700 points
wow.
on the Dow today, 2.7%. This is in reaction to China's retaliation. Early this morning, China announced their increase in tariffs, and they went on to say that they were they threatened to stop buying certain products, agricultural products, energy products, and some services. And they also discussed the possibility of dumping their holdings of U.S. Treasuries. Now, I don't know that anyone thinks that's a real likely thing, especially not to dump them. But as a result of the big stock market sell-off and the shift to find higher quality assets, 10-year has fallen. The yield's fallen. MBS prices have fallen as well. 10-year's down to 2.39, so it's a 7 basis
wow.
point reduction in rate. MBS prices are up about a quarter of a point today. So, you know, if you check on things, just check on the mortgage side and don't worry about your stocks.
Don't worry. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's where we make our money.
Yeah. Last week, Dave, you know, it's everyone knows this story. It was a volatile week. China trade talks were the cause. Interesting to note, though, even though the stock market fell a net of 400 points during the week, MBS prices were unchanged pretty much. Now, there was a lot of volatility intraday. You know, it all started on Sunday with the president's tweet about increasing tariffs, and that really changed people's perspective on where trade talks were headed. There was a positive expectation, and it turned negative. Early in the week, through Thursday anyway, the Dow had dropped 600 points. It was down another 300 points on Friday before another tweet came out. And this time, the president was saying that talks were very constructive, and people took that as a good sign, and stocks recovered on Friday from down 300 to up 100 on the day. So it really was all about what was going on with China and the trade talks there. The economic data had no impact, really. And you know, it was good to see the two inflation measures, PPI and CPI, both came in a little lower than what was expected. So
right.
you know, that didn't hurt, certainly. So that was a good thing. But it was hard to measure much reaction as the market was so volatile with the China thing. And, Dave, I see this week being very much the same. I mean, I don't know if by the end we're going to have a net change of zero for MBS, but certainly see continued reaction to China trade issues and volatility and not a lot of concern about what's on the economic calendar. Now, there is retail sales is on the calendar for Wednesday, and that is one of the two or three biggest economic events of the month. And so we'll see if there's much of a miss on the retail sales number that be enough to make much of an effect on the market. The expectation is going to show a decline from March, but March was an exceptionally good retail sales month. So we'll see about that. Industrial production comes out on Wednesday. Housing starts comes out on Thursday. The Fed governor's just about every day this week, and I noticed one of them is set to testify before the Senate Banking Committee. That's Fed Governor Quarles. And even though it's about supervisory issues, I wouldn't be surprised if there's not some partisan questions going on about what's happening because of the trade deal or the lack of a trade deal and what his views are about that. So could be interesting. So that's pretty much it, Dave. You know, it's shaping up to be another volatile week.
Another volatile week. And, you know, we'll see if it's net neutral at the end of the week like it has been so much. A lot of hullabaloo about nothing at the end of the week. So, anyway, keeps those that are hedging their risk on their toes because you never know. So, good job. Really appreciate that.
Thank you.
You bet. So good to have you here with us each and every week. Hope you had a great Mother's Day with your wife and family, my friend. And we're going to take a quick break. Before we do, I wanted to give a shout-out to one of our regular listeners, David Krugnally, has a birthday. And he's a good friend, someone I've known since my Southern California days. So happy birthday, Krug. Good to have you as a regular listener. Let's get over to Scott Gordon of Open Mortgage talking about the science of sales.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Last time, I gave you the three essential elements your story needs. Those elements should always lead to a worthy lesson, so your story has a truth or purpose. Remember, if there's no purpose, there's no story. Today, let's examine the first essential element your story needs, a relatable hero. sounds cliche, but a relatable hero is necessary. It's hardwired into our DNA to respond to a story's hero. And what's important here is he must be relatable. One of the worst things you can do is create a hero that is unrelatable. Think Superman. Superman's popularity has struggled in the eyes of the public. Why? Because he's too perfect. His physical powers are godlike. But that's not what makes him unrelatable. It's his moral perfection. Think about it. Who wants to hang out with that guy? Nobody. We all want to be him, but we know we can't, so he's unrelatable. Give me Batman. That guy has some issues, but don't we all? That's the difference, and it shows. In recent decades, Superman has become more human, and his popularity has risen. The hero in your story can be you, or your company, or a customer. One of the most effective strategies is to combine these heroes. For example, tell a story to a borrower where the relatable hero is a borrower that is forced with a difficult situation that he or she must overcome, and it is only by your assistance that the borrower achieves his or her ultimate goal of home ownership. This dynamic will make your customers feel that, with your assistance, they can be the hero in their own story. If it sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Ah, science of sales. If you heard me chuckling in there, it's because Superman's too perfect. Who wants to hang with perfection? Well, I like hanging with people that are, all right, so nearly perfect. Well, that includes Scott Gordon. Check it out at openmortgage.com. Also, someone I enjoy hanging with is Andy Schell. We got the Profit Doctor here because Alice Alvey is not. That's a bummer. Hope she had a great Mother's Day. But Andy, good to have you here.
Hey.
You're amazing. You are one amazing. Enjoy hanging around with you. So what's going on in the world of making money, bud? I was working on accounting here. So I'm sending out an invoice, and, you know, I'm going like, and I don't know that people appreciate all that goes into the accounting realm, and you really helped me gain appreciation for it. So I had to update an invoice for someone, and it was an invoice from last year that after we close out the books, it's there. And I just wanted to delete it. I just wanted to void it out. Do you think I could do that?
No.
Because it was last year. And as soon as I started doing that, I'm going, I wanted to delete it and hit the override button. I heard your voice in the back of my head. Now, Dave, remember, there are unintended consequences when you just do that. So I backed off, and I'm going, dang, this accounting system, dang, dang, dang. And I was just having an adage because I wanted to get it done. I wanted to get it checked off. But I think that's the piece that a lot of mortgage lenders get frustrated with, Andy. They don't realize the consequences when they start messing with the accounting. So love on your accounting people. I love on Andy. So that's my segue into your segment, my friend.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you, Dave. It's kind of like one of the worst things that you can do in accounting is to Nike it.
Nike it.
Nike something in accounting, you're almost certainly going to break it. There's reasons why things are. There's reasons why you can't just delete an invoice. There's reasons why you have to have certain documents before you can set up invoices. There's reasons. Accounting is a bunch of rules. There's lots and lots of rules. And you know, I'm more of a finance guy than I am an accounting guy, but the rules of accounting are something that any business owner needs to understand because, as we've said many, many times, accounting is the language of business. And if you want to speak business, you have to know accounting. And you have to know enough accounting to be able to really understand the content of the financial statements, the P&L, the balance sheet, the statement of cash flows. You need to understand how it all fits together and why they are where they are, because there are reasons for everything. There's a reason why debits are on the left. There's a reason why you credit to generate revenue. There's elements to this stuff that make sense. And it's a little hard at first. There's no question about it. Kind of having the light bulb of accounting, oh, I get it, go off.
Yep.
Takes a while. It's almost always not intuitively obvious, but once you understand what's happening, it goes, oh, I get it. I see why that's like
that. As soon as I saw that invoice was created last year and having to make some adjustments to it, it was one of those things where I'm going, I know why this is being difficult. I just can't go in and just change it. So anyway, so good to have you on, your friend. So what you got for us today?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk more about how to make money Success by design. Success is not random. We make money because we do the things that help us make money. Just like science talked, Scott talked about the science of sales, there's a science to profit. There's processes that we follow to make things happen so that we make more money. So today I was going to talk a little bit about measurement. And measurement is super important because you can't measure, you can't manage what you can't measure. So we've got to have measurement in order to have management. So that's kind of easy. And again, that leads us to this whole notion of success is not random. Success is by design. We design to be successful. So one of the tools that we use for measurement is our financial reports. And today is the 13th. So on the 13th of the month, if you're a smaller lender, like 50 loans or less, and you are doing loan-level accounting, which is super important. I'll talk more about that in a second. It's the 13th of the month. You should have your financial statements in your hand. You should have your profit report so you know what the business made. You should have your balance sheet so you know how much cash there is. And you should be able to also know loan-level profitability, where you know how much you made on every single loan. And if every loan is a P&L, then you can know how much did you make on each originator? How much did you make on each branch? How much did you make on every product? What's the profitability of FHA? What's the profitability of conventional? You can break it down even farther than that. You'll also know how much interest did I pay on warehouse line one? How much did I pay on warehouse line two? How much interest, loan held for sale interest income did I generate on the loans funded on warehouse line one? And did I have a positive or negative warehouse spread on warehouse line one versus the loan held for sale that were funded using that warehouse line? You should know all these things. These should be second nature data. This should be something that every business owner knows. Every president of every mortgage company in the country knows within the month, the month following the prior month. So the 13th is a good cutoff date for smaller mortgage companies. Now, when you get to be a bigger mortgage company, like say 300, 400, 500 or more loans a month, it gets more complicated because you've got more warehouse lines to address and more bank accounts to reconcile, and there's just a lot more pieces to the puzzle. And even though you have more staff, it seems consistently to take longer. But you still should have your P&L by the 20th. So bigger companies can get the P&L out by the 20th. And smaller companies by the 10th. As a matter of fact, we have some companies where we do the books. We can get the P&L out by the 3rd, two or three days after the close, really, really fast. But the point is, the really important point is, you got to know profit by loan. So you know that way you'll know branch-level profitability, originator-level profitability, and you'll be able to really make informed decisions about your business. You know, when you're smaller, you can use QuickBooks, customize. You have to customize it a little bit. But you can use QuickBooks when you're smaller, and then when you get bigger, you get a different accounting system like LoanVision or AMB. But with all this stuff, you can measure activity. The key point here is you need to have measurement. You need to measure what's happening both financially and operationally. So when you think about operational measurements, you know, Motivity and their Movation product that's now part of Black Knight was really well known in the industry today. There's more, a lot more BI alternatives out there, and even Microsoft BI is becoming popular. So there's lots of ways to do it, and I'm not here to promote one way or the other. I am here to promote measurement. You got to have business intelligence on all of your activities. And so one of the things that's really popular in mortgage lending is to track underwriting turn times. So we go, well, did it take 24 hours? Did it take 7 hours? And then we also measure how long it takes to process every loan, not just how long did it take to get in and get out, but how long did it take? And we also like to measure how many conditions out of underwriting. And what I think is really interesting, and I know, Dave, you'll have a thought about this, one of the things that's really interesting to me is people focus on underwriting turn times. So an underwriting turn time would be slower if there were a ton of conditions. And an underwriting turn time would have a ton of conditions if the processor got an incomplete file and was forced to push it into underwriting even if it wasn't ready. And the processor would be forced to do that if the originator took an incomplete 1003. So, and actually what's interesting is that number, the 1003, when the new underwriting documented.
Right.
That number may change. But anyway, so the application process is sitting with a customer, gathering data, having it be a story, a conversation like Scott was talking about, but have the whole application process needs to be, tell me about your life. What are you excited about? What is your vision? What do you hope to accomplish? Tell me about your employment experiences and blah, blah, blah. And from that, you get a really good picture of the good and the bad and the ugly. You'll know about their credit score. You know about their job history. You know about their income stream. You know about their payment history. You know about their credit usage, all that stuff. And from that, you can do a really dynamic, complete 1003 and make sure the customer understands, oh, by the way, we're going to need this, that, and this, and that. So by the time it gets to the processor, the customer's already prepared. And then you get all this stuff into the processor, and they're able to do a complete submission. So then you get very few conditions. And guess what? Underwriting turn times are shorter. Loans go through faster, and they go through faster because you have to have good inputs to get good outputs. So that's the punchline. You got to have good inputs to get good outputs. If you have bad inputs, you'll have bad outputs. And everybody yells at the underwriters when most of the time, when we look at companies, it's the originator that messed it up with an incomplete application and then complains that the processor was slow and that the underwriter was slow and the originator didn't do it right to begin with. So we've got to address cause and effect. We have to point to causation. Why is it that processor was slammed and submitted and you got a bunch of conditions because the file was a mess? Why did that happen? You know, you got to sometimes point right in the mirror and point back at yourself, because sometimes you got to look at the source. What caused the impact, causation, cause and effect? What caused it to happen? So that's part of measurement. Measuring is more than just P&L. It's more than just your cash balance.
Yep.
It's how's your business running. How's it running honestly? So, and again, it's more than just on-time closes. Those are absolutely important. It's more than just fast underwriting turn times. Those are absolutely important. It's also about, did you take a complete 1003? Did you do a good job making certain you fully understood the borrower's condition? And I would say that that's one of the key elements of measurement. That's one of the key elements that drives the efficiency of an independent mortgage company or any mortgage company for that matter, and something that we all need to be measuring as we manage our business. So there you go.
What you can't measure, you cannot manage. And if you're not,
exactly.
It really makes such a difference what you're measuring. And people are, you know, it's like where your car goes. Where you're looking is oftentimes where your car goes. You can glance off to the side. But if your eyes are focused in the wrong place, you're probably going to stick your car in a bad place. And that's what happens to a lot of people. That's good.
Exactly right. So one quick side note, completely random, but based on what you were talking about, one of the things they teach you when you are learning to ride a motorcycle is if you see a pothole in the road, don't look at it.
Look at it.
Because look away. Because you will go where you look. And it's amazing how that works. Do not look at the pothole. Look away. Look off to the side. And you won't hit it. It's amazing how what you just said is absolutely true. You've got to you're going to go where you look. And if you're not looking, you're not going to go anywhere. And if you want to look at what your business is doing, you've got to measure it. And to measure it, you've got to have accounting reports and activity reports, operational activity reports. Super, super important. I could care less what system you use. But you got to have reports that measure it.
You can measure it. You can manage it. And it all rolls up to accounting and profitability. And, boy, that is a big, big topic. We could spend a whole hot topic on that. So good to have you with us. Did you have a good Mother's Day, by the way? You said you went over to James. You're a new grandpa. So, I mean, that's the honor.
That's the reason I went over to James and Ira and Finn's. Well, we went to church with them and then went to their house and had a great time, had an awesome time. It's always just, it's an amazing experience to sit there and hold the grandson and have, a philosophical discussion with my son and his lovely wife. There's always something on his mind.
Oh,
it's just amazing.
James is intellectually stimulating. Always thinking out of the box. Love that guy. Appreciate you, Andy. Appreciate you being here.
You too.
Thank
you, Dave.
Rest of the week to you, and let's get together here for some barbecue. Keep saying that. We haven't done it. You got to do it. All right, sir.
Absolutely.
Have a good one. We're going to run over to Knowledge Coop. Our friends over there, Nathan and Ken Perry and their whole team, is working hard to make training fun and easy. They use a great technology called a Smart Digital Platform. It's one they've created. I encourage you to listen to this message, and then we're going to come back with a hot topic segment, and you'll enjoy these interviews. So without further ado, Nathan, what you got?
Hey, Nathan here from the Knowledge Coop. Do you need to teach a course? Have you considered maybe using the Socratic method? See, it's a process of using questions that engage learners to question their assumptions in order to eliminate contradictions. The primary goal is not to have listeners try to answer unanswerable questions, but to get them to develop critical thinking and to keep them engaged in your topic. Have you got some training to do? Check out the Knowledge Cube for fun and easy video-based training for the mortgage professionals out there. And it's all powered by a smart digital platform.
Good stuff. Love that. Check it out at knowledgecoop.com. Appreciate all of our sponsors. Appreciate them and appreciate all you all bring, as we say here in Texas, all you all bring to the industry. We honored our moms this last week. My mom passed away a few years back. Missed her a lot. But I have the memory of her lives on. And I look at what contributions she made to my life. And I just wanted to go out to industry and find some great mother-daughter, mother-son stories and record them. So we're doing that on special holidays, Father's Day and Mother's Day. And today we have a back-to-back doubleheader. And we're going to start off with Marcia Davies and her daughter, Emily Davies. This interview is just something that I thoroughly enjoy doing. You laugh and you cry and you listen to some of these things. It's just so special. And then also Jason Frazier and his mom, Marilyn Richardson, who is, again, the president and CEO of Macy McDuffie. She talked about breaking through that early on. I think she was one of the very first women that entered the C-suite as the CEO of a major significant company that had been around since 1834 or something like that. I mean, 1800s. And then Jason, who was in technology, did a great job working at places like LinkedIn, the investors, Peter, whatever his last name was, responsible for LinkedIn. I mean, he had a strong technology background, but started working at Mason McDuffie, helping them with their technology. And it's a slippery slope. You start working around the family in mortgage lending, you're going to slip into mortgage lending more times than not. My daughter just got into the industry. Andy's son, James, is in the industry. So good business, great industry. And I'm excited to share with you these stories. So let's start off with Emily and Marcia and their amazing story. I'm excited and honored to have two industry veterans joining me on the podcast today. It's a mother-daughter team. Both of them really don't need much of an introduction, but for those listeners that are new to the industry, and we're grateful so many millennials are joining and you're learning more about the industry, you may not know about these two. So we're going to start off with Marcia Davies, and then we're going to begin with Emily Davies. So good to have both you ladies with us. Thank you for joining us on this special Mother's Day podcast.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you.
It's real exciting. And what I'm going to start off with, first of all, Marcia, I can't believe anyone doesn't know you, especially with all that you're doing at the MBA. And specifically, the thing I'm most passionate about having a daughter is Empower. So let's lead off with you. Give us a little insights into what you do, the company you work for, the MBA, and what you're doing about Empower.
I am Chief Operating Officer of the Mortgage Bankers Association, and I have added to my title Founder of Empower, which is MBA's effort to help women in our industry, and it stands for Promoting Women to Extend Their Reach. And at MBA, as COO, I'm responsible for strategic integration amongst all of the efforts that MBA does. I'm responsible for conferences and membership and training. Believe it or not, IT falls under me, and if you know me, I am not an IT person, but I have a really great group of people who know IT or are experts on that. So there's a whole host of things under that umbrella. But as you mentioned, Empower, over the last 2.5 years, I have been spending a lot of my time creating a network and an environment for women to expand their reach, gain professional development, create networks. And it's just blossomed. I'll end with, in the last 2.5 years, we have engaged more than 11,000 in the Empower community, and it's continuing to grow.
It's such an important part. I want to just say publicly, on behalf of all of our listeners, thank you, Marcia, for your dedication to the MBA, all that you do. People don't realize all that you do, but more importantly, that you do it in such excellence. That's probably very evident because anyone who attends a conference and sees how these conferences run like clockwork, it's amazing. So kudos to you. And then to those listeners that have not experienced an Empower event, I'm telling you, you got to get to the next one. Trisha Megliazzo, which is a dear, dear personal friend of mine, does a lot of those when you're not there. She does an amazing job. But Marcia, thank you for what you're doing, especially now that I have a daughter who just got into the mortgage industry. And speaking of daughters, let's get over to you, Emily. I'm so excited to have you here, and I'm so honored to have met you in person. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role there at the company that you're at.
Yes, thanks, David. So it's a good thing I don't have any big shoes to follow with my introduction. But I work with Freddie Mac. I am in their single family office of the clients, and I've had a number of different roles there in my 8 years with them. But right now I am focused on supporting some of our largest clients and making sure that everything runs as smoothly as it can, and just focusing on being the best partner that we can to the industry.
I love Freddie Mac for many reasons. One of the things they do is they do partner well. I had many, in all the mortgage companies I've owned and run, we've always had a Freddie Mac partnership, and I just really hold that partnership so special. So you're doing a great job of keeping up that reputation of Freddie Mac. Emily, I want us to go to you with this next question, then we'll go to Marcia. But how did you get into the mortgage industry? Was it accidental or intentional? Now, I can suspect what the answer might be, but maybe it's not as suspect. To talk about that, was it accidental or intentional?
It was accidental.
Wow, I did not anticipate that. With your mom being it, I thought that would be intentional.
It was serendipitous, I think. And, you know, in the environment that I was raised, I've always known my mom was such a powerful leader. And to me, I just didn't think that the mortgage market was necessarily my cup of tea. But when you graduate college, it turns out you need to get a job. And so one of the best ways to do that is to leverage your connections. So while I ended up interviewing and luckily being hired by Freddie Mac, I was able to leverage some of the connections from my mom's legacy. And while it may not have been an intentional first move or first career step, the past 8 years and everything that followed certainly was.
Marcia, was your journey into mortgage lending accidental or intentional?
Like my daughter, it was accidental. I actually had been working at a trade association when I first moved to Washington, D.C., and I had a great boss who was fired unexpectedly when she went in asking for pay equity for a job that she was doing for the last year for her boss who had been terminated, and they fired her. And I realized that the reason they felt comfortable doing that right before our convention was because they knew I was there to carry on. And I decided I didn't want to work for an organization that treated people that way. So my 25-year-old self marched in and on principle resigned, which felt good in the moment. And as I was driving home, realizing I had to pay rent and everything else, you know, back then we didn't have phones to call. I had to wait till I got home. And I called my sister and told her what I did. And, you know, the universe provides, because my sister said, don't worry. There is an opening in my organization that I think you'll be perfect for. And so my sister had been, and still does, work at this company. At the time when I started in 1984, so do the math, you can figure out how old I am, was called the Mortgage Corporation, which was then rebranded as Freddie Mac.
Yep.
And so
it
was accidental, but my sister, who had just celebrated her 40th anniversary at Freddie Mac this year, was the reason that I even knew about a job in the mortgage industry, and I never left.
That's so cool. And I just got to give you a shout out to your husband, Scott. He is just such a neat guy, and how he has supported you. I think when you have a strong woman in the industry, it makes it so much easier when you have a wonderful, loving, supportive husband. And I always enjoy being around him. He's always so gracious. And I just love how he lets you operate in, that's not probably the right characterization, how you have figured out your partner together. And he just loves sitting back and watching you shine. He's just a pretty amazing guy. So be sure to tell him hello from me. When we talk about us getting into the industry, that's one thing, but staying in this industry, especially with the stress and all the twists and turns and all this industry has been through, Marcia, what has kept you here?
Well, David, I was at Freddie Mac for 21 years. And as we mentioned, I started young. actually, my daughter started younger than I was, but back
yes,
then
I did. I was
really
going to jump in.
But I was fortunate enough at Freddie Mac because it was back then a fairly young organization. I was there when the company went public and it was growing. And so I was able to have four different careers while I was at Freddie Mac. And I learned along the way, if you take a risk and get out of your comfort zone, you can open up great potential. So I think what's kept me in the industry is I had these amazing 21 years at Freddie Mac, and I stepped away for a little bit of time. And then I went back into the industry and started working at HUD. And I never expected I'd be working in a government agency, but I was there during the housing crisis. And it was really a bird's eye view of how the government and regulators react during something like a housing crisis and how the banks and mortgage bankers were being perceived by the regulator, which prepared me incredibly well for the job I have at MBA. I've been at MBA 8 years, and it's been, I think, the best job I've had in my career. So I keep learning and growing, and I love the people in this industry. David, I know you've been in it a long time, and you said your daughter just joined. But they are really good people, and you create
it
lasting,
is.
Lifelong friendships. So I really feel blessed that it might not have been my direct path to come into this industry, but I am blessed that I ended up in this industry.
So, you know, as my mom said, while our time didn't overlap at Freddie Mac, she really hit the nail on the head about the environment there. So when I first started, it was in the event space, much like an area that my mom is familiar with. And And, you know, I was involved in the industry events, but it wasn't as in depth or as close to the flame as I like to call it. And my hands weren't in the issues the same way. And so one of the things that I've been empowered to do, and, you know, part of it I attribute to having a confidant and having somebody that can help me make the right decisions and mold my choices, like my mother, who's familiar with the industry, but it was also having the opportunity within Freddie Mac where you can really decide where you want to go. There's so many different facets of the business. And so, you know, after I had done some time with the event world and I was seeing some of the issues, I wanted to get more involved. I was passionate about seeing resolutions and, you know, being more involved than one event may have you get. And so I was able to, you know, bridge some of those gaps and look for other opportunities and advance my skills into a much closer to the flame type of job in the office of the client. And so I think it's just a completely different role than I would have ever thought. So while it was, you know, not an intentional getting into the mortgage business move, if you will, and I probably would say it was more the events business than the mortgage business, when it was time to shift my career focus, it was absolutely an intentional, this is the business I want to be in. Look at all these great role models, my mother, my aunt, and I had so many powerful women in my family that just laid a foundation. Why wouldn't I want to be in this space? Why wouldn't I want to bring the same type of value and follow in their footsteps any longer?
So good. That's so good. And you did have a great example. And I just applaud Freddie Mac. Kim Schubert is a dear, dear friend of mine. It's, I think, runs senior accounts there. And she talked about the leadership within Freddie Mac. And especially when there were some issues coming up and being more high profile reports in other industries about inequalities and issues with discrimination or just harassment on the workplace. And the way he handled that was just so exemplary. It really touched her. And that's the former CEO. And I just want to give kudos to any management, especially Freddie Mac's management, how they've stepped up on these really important issues. So you're both worked at great places. Emily, you're still there. Let's get into some of your journey within the industry. I love your stories, and I want to focus on, with this being a Mother's Day podcast, I want to focus about those tough places or places that you've gone through. They don't have to be tough stories, but just places where you've gone through where the mother-daughter relationship has really helped. Talk about that. And Emily, we're going to start off with you and then go to Marcia.
For me, one of the challenges when I first entered the business was not knowing enough about the business to really be able to talk intelligently about it. You know, I could pick up snippets here and there from my mother, but I really was trying to learn it myself. I remember my first week, I drew a diagram of what the secondary mortgage market looks like, what it looks like from a borrower perspective all the way through to the secondary side of it. And I think there finally came a time where I wanted to shift my roles and responsibilities, as I mentioned earlier, and I wanted to get a little closer to the flame where I said, you know what, I have this phenomenal resource at home. I need to learn this business. I don't know enough, and I need to use that. And I remember, you know, calling my mom. I would call her for guidance and for counsel, and frankly, I would call her for Mortgage 101. I would call her, and she would be able to help me get some of that grounding so that I could learn.
That's so important. I think, you know, you're so fortunate to have someone who has had such a stellar career in the mortgage industry, has a unique perspective, especially with the role she's had. Marcia, go to that same place. What are some of the places you and your daughter have been through when it comes to the mother-daughter relationship and how it's helped, how you've been able to contribute, and looking back at some those special moments?
So I'm going to tell one story because it is a Mother's Day podcast that was so special to me. So
are you
going to
make me ugly cry on a podcast?
I am not going to make you ugly cry on a podcast. You may not even know this story. So, David, it's pretty traditional that the MBA leadership and the Freddie Mac leadership get together a few times a year. And one of those times is always during our annual convention. And we were in a leadership meeting. It was Freddie Mac's leadership, MBA's leadership at the time. And we were taking a break during that meeting, you know, to get a cup of coffee or whatever and sitting back down. And I'm getting a cup of coffee and this other mother who I know, who I worked with for all these years, Chris Boyle, I'm going to give her a shout out, came up to me because Emily reports up into Chris Boyle's organization. And I make a point not to try to talk about Emily to anybody at Freddie Mac. If they bring her up to me, I'll talk. But I you know, because that's her world. It's not my world. That's my former world. But I'm getting a cup of coffee, and she came up, and she whispered into my ear, mother to mother. She said, I want you to know your daughter is doing an amazing job for us. And as a mom, I know you probably wondered how she's doing. So I'm letting you know she's doing amazing work. And that was probably, you know, within the first 18 months, maybe 2 years of Emily's career there. And I just grabbed her hand and I looked at her and I'm like, this is the best part of this annual convention for me. But she respected that I would never ask, but she wanted to give me that gift. And it was truly a mother to mother moment. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that
was. Yes, it does. It's a wonderful story.
And it's also tracks back to women supporting women. Like it wasn't about us both being, you know, working mothers or whatever. She just approached me as a mom because I guess she said if I was in her shoes, I'd want to know, I knew I couldn't ask. So, Emily, I don't know if you know about that story, but it meant the world to me. And to this day, random people come up to me. Some I know from Freddie Mac, so they're not random, but others I don't know, to tell me about the great job my daughter does, just unsolicited. So she is making her mark, and I couldn't be more proud. And yes, we have had those coaching moments where
I thought you weren't going to make me cry.
But we have had coaching moments where I've tried to teach patience and perseverance and explain to her that our industry sometimes takes a while to turn. We're not, you know, we're like a battleship. We can't turn on a dime. Yep. And as a young millennial coming in asking, why do we do it this way? Why do we do it this way? What is it? Sometimes I'm like,
patience.
And, you know, I will say she takes feedback incredibly well. And she also knows, like me, sometimes she can be stubborn. And so sometimes we'll lock heads, but we'll come back at it because at the end of the day, we're both just trying to be the best we can be. And, you know, believe it or not, David, not everybody takes our advice, which is annoying, but I learned that sometimes our advice is not always welcome or maybe,
you know, and I don't know, but I will say, you know, one of the things that for me, especially starting out in the industry, I didn't want to, you know, continually play the my mom is Marsha Davies card, because everybody knows who Marsha Davies is. Everybody knows the wonderful things she does. And I remember the first time I went to an Empower event. This is the one for any of your listeners who happen to be there, where she did make me ugly cry on camera, which was fun. yes, on camera. Very close.
Oh, good.
Angle, so
it's on record. That's great.
But, you know, she was just sitting in a room, watching her command the room, listening to women at, you know, coffee breaks, or people just coming up, or people talking about, you know, this wonderful woman in the industry and just her leadership and direction, and how, you know, she's a mother to so many people in just wanting guidance, wanting the best for you, wanting a safe environment. Those are just things that people were saying. And so then for me to turn around and be able to say, you know, that's my mother. Oh,
that's
cry.
My mom.
So proud of that.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
Now she's
going to
make
lessons...
me cry.
We run that risk when we start doing these interviews. We do run that risk, but it's so touching. I think the most important part, one of the things you said, Marsha, that I really want to highlight is that you purposely did not interview. You stayed out. You created a space for Emily to shine on her own. And I think that's so hard. I'm struggling with that right now. My daughter's in it for all of, I think, now a month in the mortgage industry. She's working for a client of mine and a friend. And it's so hard not to pick up the phone. How's she doing? How's it going? And I just applaud you for how you put space in there to let her carve out her own mark. And then Emily, to your mom is so well known and so respected in the industry, not to play that card. That really takes some maturity on your part to do that. So kudos to both of you. Hope our listeners will pull away with some of that. So if some of you moms that are wanting to get your daughters or dads, get your kids into this thing like I have been wanting and have now succeeded, learn from those really important lessons. As we wrap up this, and there's so many words of advice, Marsha, I know you offer women through Empower. And by the way, folks, we're going to put in a link in this podcast of the interview I did with Marsha Davies on leadership. So it's a Lick It On Leadership series. There'll be a link. You can click on it. You'll learn a lot more about that. Of course, you can Google Empower, go to the MBA website, and just see all these amazing videos, amazing recordings, and maybe even find the one where she got Emily to, you know, just cry right on camera. We'd love to see that. I got to get that one going. But I mean, let's talk about it. And this one, we're going to start out with you, Marsha. Let's start out with the words of advice for others who are trying to bring in people that are important to them. Maybe it's a daughter, maybe it's a son, maybe it's just a loved one or someone that they've mentored over the years. What is the advice you have for bringing someone into the industry and helping them have launch a successful career such as that Emily has launched in this industry, which you've been a part of?
Well, one, I think there's amazing opportunity within this industry. And I'm going to do a little plug for Mortgage Banking Bound. We have a program that is free, especially to college students, where they can participate in this online program to see if they're even interested in learning more about the business and getting involved in mortgage banking. It gives them kind of the high-level tutorial of mortgage banking and opportunities create. We also have Cref Careers for the commercial multifamily side of the business, where we go into colleges. So we really think there's a lot of opportunity. I have experienced the opportunity. I have watched my daughter, who has bought her own condo at the ripe old age of, I'm going to say 27. She might correct me. She might have been 28, but I think she was 27. 26, see?
26.
She keeps getting...
Way to
go. I get, you know, as I get older, she gets younger. And it's one of those things where it really provides you great opportunity, and there are a lot of different areas in the business you can go. I will say that I think there's a lot of opportunity if you can reach out. I think our industry is very giving. We have a lot of people who are mentoring. I think we have a lot of companies that are looking for young talent, new talent. I can tell you, when my daughter questions a process, I'm like, she's so right. Like, because she brings a practical theory to it. But David, you probably know, sometimes we do things because they've worked for a certain amount of time. And so you don't think to go back and question that process, but bringing in new talent and new thoughts creates a whole opportunity to bring in those new perspectives. And so I would love to see more and more young talent come into the industry. I'll do another plug. MBA has a group called MPACT, and that is for young professionals. We connect people together. We provide events and opportunities for them as well. And you know what? It's a career that you can have. It's not just a job. You can make it your career. And, you know, my daughter is going to celebrate her 8th anniversary. How hard is that to believe?
In this industry. Isn't that amazing?
And, David, I do have a funny story I want to tell, and I'm not even sure Emily knows about this story. So it was when I was in public affairs, and my boss, Dan Driscoll, we were in the middle of, you know, some public affairs important priority that was taking us in over the weekend. And so Emily was about 2, and I needed to bring her into the office with me. And so I got in early, and I thought we were the only ones there. And we're in my office, and I'm working on a press release, and Emily, being her 2-year-old self, lets me know it's time. She needs to run to the restroom. And so I take her down the hall, and I realize I forgot my security pass. And that back at that time, the women's room was locked, but the men's room wasn't. And I figure it's Saturday. I should be safe, right? So I open the men's room door, and immediately my boss is standing there because he's walking out. And he looked at me and he said, "Oh, this must be Emily. You're bringing her into the men's room?" And I was stunned because I didn't know how to answer that question. But anyway, we all had a big laugh over it. And, you know, he's a father of 2 and understood the urgency of getting your 2-year-old into a bathroom. But anyway, Emily, you should know the first time you met my mentor was in the men's room.
I think that sounds like the inception of how I learned to start breaking the rules. I think I can say that was because of you, Mom. Thank you for giving me the courage.
I love that story. It's so good. One of the things you said, Emily, that really was so good, and that I want to highlight this, and I really think this is, it starts, rather than running your mom and saying, you know, do you have a map of the secondary markets? You made the effort to start mapping those on your own, start doing the research on your own. I think that really shows the type of person that you are. You're going to try to figure it out. You know what I wrote down? Get a copy of that map if it's still available, because I think it's something that we could use. I think it's so valuable. And it's that kind of, and I agree with Marcia. Your mom made a great point. We need people questioning, why do we do that? And that goes back to that old story, why they cut the ham in half, and the millennial daughters just got married. Says, why do we cut the ham in half, Mom? It's because you've heard the story probably before. And it says, well, that's because Grandma did it. So you go to Grandma, why do we cut the ham in half? And Grandma says, oh, we don't need to. I just did that because I couldn't afford the bigger pot. I cooked the ham, had to cut it in half to cook it in 2 pots because I didn't have the big enough pot. I think we do a lot of things in this industry because it's always been done that way. We do a lot of business process improvement. We're seeing that attitude constantly. So what Emily did, listeners, drawing out things, take it on yourself to do that. So, Emily, let's wrap it up. What advice do you have, other than mapping out processes and trying to figure it out for themselves? That's just a great way to go about it. But what would your advice for people coming in? And
so,
especially for my daughter. Speak to my daughter who's come in, keep that out, and how would you advise her?
So first things first, I drew that map in pencil and hung it up on a wall that got a lot of sunlight, so I couldn't read it by my 3rd year. So use pen. That would be my first piece of advice.
That's good.
You know, the second piece is something I actually learned from my mother, and the way that she would, I don't want to say correct, but the way that she would allow me to change my thought process when I wouldn't understand something, or I would get so easily frustrated because a solution seemed black and white to me. And she would say, you know, use every moment as a learning opportunity. She would always about how she's been in this industry for so long and she's still learning. And, you know, I think it was something in the beginning I took a little bit for granted, and it is not a simple business. It is not a simple industry. And there is always something to learn if a process is in place for a certain way. Maybe it is because grandma didn't have a big enough pot, or maybe it's because the ham just tastes better when you cook it in two halves, you know? So it's mm-hmm. definitely learn something with everything you do. And I will say the second thing that my mom always says that sticks out to me, and I don't even know if you know this, Mom, but you've always said, do your best, regardless of who's watching, regardless of who it's for, regardless of you, if you agree with it, regardless of how you feel about it, you do your best and you will shine and you will be successful and it will work out. And, you know, I may not always see the things working out, but whenever I follow that advice, it does pan out and it does come true. And I think that is universal. I think when you show up with purpose, when you show up with intention, wow. you always do your best work and that gets seen. And, you know, I lied. I have one more piece, something that a quote that my mom has shared with me is, when you get to the top, send the elevator back down. I by no means, you know, think that I'm at the top, but I try to help every person that I can. I like to do recognition. I love to share that. And that's something that I see my mom exemplify in all of her behaviors. And I just think it is something that is so fundamental in a workplace. And it just goes such a long way. So make sure that when you're in your winning season, you're looking around to see who else you can bring on your team. And I think that that is also just as universal. And I am so lucky that, you know, my head coach is that lovely one that I get to call Mom, you know, over there on the other side of the phone.
Wow. Wow. That is, how do you top that? Folks, if you have any concern about the future of our industry, listen to the words that just came out of Emily Davis's mouth. That was just amazing. And
it's
a testimony.
Right?
Impressive. Just like her mom. If you go to any conference and wonder why it runs so well, you know Marcia's behind the scenes. I've watched her walking out of a meeting with David Stevens back in those days carrying a three-ring binder, and you know that thing was going to run well because of how much planning went into it. Wow, this has been so much fun to connect with both of you and have you share with our listening audience some of these great stories, and there's so many principles that are taken away. I want to say thank you to both of you for being here, and happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much, David.
Thank you. Love you, Mom. Thanks, David.
I love that interview. There's obviously a tight relationship between those two mortgage professionals, and I just really enjoyed sharing that with you. Be sure to write Emily and Marcia if you want. Get a hold of me. I'll make sure you get the email addresses if you need to. They're great, great people. Our next interview with Jason Frazier and his mom, Marilyn Richardson, is one that I also really enjoyed recording. There's so many good points in this one. So we listened to a mom and daughter. Now we're listening to a mom and son interview. And without further ado, here's Marilyn Richardson, President and CEO of Mason McDuffie, and Jason Frazier, award-winning marketer and podcaster. Joining me on the podcast today is Marilyn Richardson, the mother of Jason Frazier. Now, many of you know who Jason is. Jason invited me. He's the founder of the Industry Syndicate, along with several other gentlemen. He invited me to be one of the original guys that got in on that, to be a member of it, and we're honored to be there. So, Marilyn, welcome, and happy post-Mother's Day. Good to have you here. And then, Jason, welcome as well.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Well, this is so easy for Jason. He does these all the time. But Marilyn, this Jason interviewed you much on his podcast yet?
Actually, this is my very first interview on a podcast.
Wow. So you have son who's a podcast star, and then we have you. And Jason, come on, what's the deal here? Your mom was so dynamic when I met her. It was so
yeah. So thanks for bringing that up, Dave. So I'm sure that's saving for a later time. So that's problem. She doesn't know it yet, but she's actually going to be in line with the new podcast that I started with Christine Beckwith-Styles on the Mortgage Edge podcast. So that she will be a future guest on that one.
That's awesome. Well, I love Christine. It's just amazing.
Nice save there, Jason.
Nice save, yeah. I don't know if you were on the guest list or not, Marilyn, but we just got you invited.
Yeah, that is
So come up with that.
So what we want to do is the honoring moms, and so Marilyn, we just want to honor you, and you are to be honored as both a mom of a, I think, pretty dynamic guy, a leader in our industry, Jason, and then but you're also a leader in the mortgage industry. And what I want to do is just get our let our audience get to know the both of you just briefly. So Marilyn, give us a little bit of an intro into yourself, how you got in the mortgage industry, and then if you could tie it in, how you talked Jason into it. If you did, and then we'll get over to Jason. So, Marilyn, why don't you start off with the story
and
let our audience get to know you.
Well, probably not that unusual that I really didn't plan to be in the mortgage business, but I was busy saving money for college, and I had a friend who had an opening. She said that her company had an opening for a receptionist, and that company happened to be a mortgage company, and I was 19, 20 years old at the time, and I said, great, you know, it was more money than I was making where I was working at the time. So I went over there, and interestingly enough, I just really found it very interesting business and just started learning going from job to job. I went from being a receptionist to being a loan shipper to being a loan closer to being a loan processor to an underwriter. Actually worked in servicing for a while. So I just wanted to learn all I possibly could about the mortgage business. And so it ended up being my career.
At the same company, if I recall correctly. Was that at Mason McDuffie that whole time?
No. Actually, I started off with a company. The name was National First Mortgage in Southern California.
So
that was the company where I learned a lot of the majority of my skills, and then moved from that company to Mason McDuffie in Southern California.
Okay.
And so I worked in that area, and then I received a promotion to move to Northern California. And at that time, Mason McDuffie was a partnership, a very old partnership that started in 1887. And they had no female partners, and I became the first female partner in 1979.
Wow.
So that was it was very interesting to be the first female partner. The majority of the partners did not want a female partner. I was really lucky. I think it's a testament to the need to have mentorship as you build your career. And my boss was my mentor and refused to, unfortunately, was a big enough owner that he refused to bring in any additional partners unless they voted me in. And that's how I got in.
That's awesome. Well, let's honor that partner. Who is that partner?
Yes. His name is Don Tetson.
Oh, my gosh. That's a name, the blast from the past. Yes. Awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, he definitely was a great boss. And my career just kept on going. And I eventually, in this Mason McDuffie, became CEO and president. Jason, he got into the business. He was in technology. And whenever I would have questions about technology in the mortgage business, I would ask him. And of course, he had to become familiar with the mortgage business to answer my questions. And also, you know, he obviously knew a lot of the other managers. I was always bringing him in when he was young and introducing him to people. And so we were just lucky that we had an opportunity to get him to come on. I can't remember the year. Jason probably can. But we knew that things were changing rapidly and talked him into coming in and being our CIO and helping us prepare for all of, you know, the future of the business and where it's going as far as social media presence and marketing and all of that. So that's kind of how
we got into
mortgage banking. He was born into it, I guess you could say.
He was born in that. Yeah, that's excellent. Jason, what year was that? And then let's talk about your really pretty amazing technology career, your first career, and how that has really drew you into it. Talk about your journey into it, but also lead up to it by what you were doing in technology. That's so fascinating.
Gotcha. Yeah. So when I got started, I actually got started just selling software and then, you know, just had a few opportunities to get into IT and just, I had, just very lucky to be able to work in a lot of different jobs and positions in IT, which made me well-rounded. And you know, IT now is a lot different than it was when I was coming up in the 90s or late 90s. And that's when the, you know, the dot-com boom was happening and everything else. And everyone wanted to have an internet company. And so it was really just, you know, fortuitous to have to be coming up in technology at that time and learning and working around so many great people and also learning from a lot of mistakes. And so, you know, with that, having a lot of that, a lot of those different backgrounds with, like, you know, actually building computers to building networks to doing system administration, web development, all, you know, basically every position in IT I held at some point. So that allowed me, you know, bigger opportunities to work in other industries. And through that, I eventually got paired up with Peter Thiel and his hedge fund the end of 2004, beginning of 2005. And that's, you know, right after Facebook and eBay had just purchased PayPal, which, you know, Peter was a founder of with Elon Musk. And so, you know, I got kind of my start into more of a higher end technology with venture capital and technology startups and really got a, you know, I got to work with LinkedIn and consult with them and some bigger players that are out there right now, like Keith Raboy, who's one of the founders of Open Door. And it was just a great, great opportunity to do that. But, you know, for anyone that's ever worked in that type of environment, especially in finance and hedge funds during 2005 through the crash, knows that that was an insane environment. And there, it was very common for me to be working 36-hour shifts, sleeping in the office, you know, working 24 hours without sleep. Now, at that time, you know, I would be lying if I say that I didn't enjoy it. That's, you know, to a certain extent, enjoyed the work, loved the environment. I love what we were building. It was truly a, and I would never change any of that, just because of the people I got to work with and people got to be around and seeing the on-demand technology society and culture that we're living today basically get birthed through a lot of these companies. You know, it was just something great. And so I took a sabbatical at the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, because I didn't really need the work. I'd made quite a bit of money. And so I did kind of like a mini retirement that lasted for about 2 weeks before I got bored out of my mind. And talked to, you know, I had been a consultant and helped, like my mom had said, that when they brought back Mason McDuffie in its current. And so I helped them with technology stuff. That was around 2005, but I came on as a consultant in 2009 and then joined the company full time at the end around, I think like August or September of 2009 is when I started full time at the mortgage company.
Gosh, 10 years ago. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Talk about having a mom in the mortgage industry. From your perspective, we've opened up and receiving women into the marketplace, specifically in the mortgage industry. I mean, they've always been there, but into leadership positions. And your mom was the first to break the ceiling. I'd love to get your perspective first. I'm talking about the glass ceiling, the infamous glass ceiling. And I'll give your perspective first, and then Marilyn will come back to you and talk to you about what that was like. Jason?
Yeah. So growing up, you know, it's funny as we talked about like getting in the mortgage business is that I can remember quite a few times where, you know, my mom told me the last thing I wanted to do was ever be working in the mortgage business because of how crazy it is. And, you know, stressful, complicated job. And so, you know, she obviously went through a lot of, especially, you know, being a woman and back in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s and that type of, you know, good old boys club that we've talked about before, Dave. And so it was, you know, learning from her, seeing there, I attribute all my work ethic, how I learned about business, how I approach problems, you know, to learning from her and watching her work, the amount of hours she put in as a mom that took care of my sister and myself, and then full-time working, business trips and everything, and still managed to, you know, make everything work, right? You know, it wasn't always pretty. It wasn't always great. But at the same time, you know, she did everything she could in her power to, you know, make sure we had a comfortable upbringing and were loved and everything else. But at the same time, never let the quality of her work, you know, fail. And so that's one thing that I took away. It's something that, you know, I believe that you either have or you don't. It's not something that you learn. You know, it's something that you can harness and make better. But I believe I got that from her and watching her and see how she did. And you know, I think in this day and age with, you know, kind of the hustle and work ethic culture that we have and life, work-life balance, you know, a lot of it gets a bad rap. But to me, I think there's a certain element of, you know, just of greatness when you can not let things fail, right, at work and then still have that family life. Because a lot of times, like me, I love the work. I love doing what I do. And even if I won the lottery tomorrow, I would still find a way to do what I do. And so, you know, learning from her, watching her as a woman, that's why whenever I've been in a position to where I can, you know, because in the business it's still that way, and just, you know, in our economy is still that way, is one thing I learned is that I love to work with women who are strong and
yes.
who do want to achieve and be successful and do everything they can. I want to make sure as a man in this industry, I could do whatever I can. It's part of what we're doing with the Mortgage X podcast is making sure that we're profiling women. You know, it's starting to get a lot better in the industry. It still has a long way to go, but you know, it's part of what I learned from my mom and seeing that and understanding that just like what she had mentioned with Don Tetson, giving, you know, making it happen for her to become partner, she still had to achieve it. She still had to be yes. successful and still had to be worthy of it, but still needed that help. So that's one thing that I had always, you know, taken is that whenever I would be in, and I've had, you know, been blessed to be in a position of management and executive level as well, and C-level is, you know, if there is a way to promote, you know, a woman or, you know, help someone get into that position to be successful and give them every opportunity to do so, you know, I wanted to make sure I took full advantage of that.
That's so good. Marilyn, what was it like then compared to now for you? And part of it, I'm asking the question because my daughter, who is 27 years old, is just getting into the mortgage business, tried other things. She's an artist, and she's finally getting in. I'm not sure if it's a career she would have chosen, but the gravitational pull, I think, is like Jason. It was a gravitational pull. He ended up there. Our daughters ended up there. And I look back from then to now, help these gals that are coming into the industry now realize how fortunate they are to come into it at this time in the season. Talk about the difference of the contract.
Well, yeah, very fortunate. It definitely, Jason's right. You had to work hard. I mean, that's a given that especially when I came in, I was watched more. The expectations mm-hmm. for me were more than the male partners. And there was just things that we had to overcome. For example, the meetings that we had were a club in San Francisco that didn't even allow females. So it was like, oh my gosh, where are we going to, you know, where can we meet now since we have this female that we have to accommodate? And they had separate restrooms for the partners that they had to change that since I was female and all the rest of them were males. And but it took a long time. Also, even just the other partners were making more money than I was making. And so it took a few years for them to recognize. I actually had one of them tell me, well, you know, men have to make more money because they have to support their family. And at the time, I was a single mom raising two children.
Wow.
So, and a mom, you know, my mom, I took care of my mom as well. So
wow.
It was like, well, I'm, you know, I'm having to raise a family also. And then we would have like, we may have a few of the partners and we would have a guest in that we were having a meeting. And once he turned, one of our guests is a male, and he turned to me and asked me to go get a cup of coffee because he just assumed I was the secretary there taking notes and wasn't one of the partners. And, you know, just things of that that would come up. So, you know, you were always kind of aware of the fact that you were, you know, different and the expectations were different. And really interesting, I know since the year that Jason was born actually is the first year where they came out with regulations where we couldn't ask a female if they were going to have any more children in order
That's
to
right,
use
yeah.
their income to qualify for a loan. And, you know, women today, they're like, what, are you kidding? You know, you really had to ask those questions in order to use the income from a woman because it was just assumed that women would stay home and take care of children. So I would get some of that as well from the men in the office. It's like, you know, shouldn't you be home? Especially men that reported to me. You know, you have that
yeah.
feeling of, I'm the one that should have your job simply because I'm the male and you're the female and I'm not going to take orders from a female. So you were, you know, over the years, you know, fortunately that got better as more and more women just needed to have the opportunity. And as long as you do your job and you do your job well, it will eventually come. But I think today there's more assumption that they will do their job just as well as their male counterparts, where that wasn't true when I came into the business. But
wow.
having said that, I also feel very, very fortunate that I got into a business where I could do that, you know, compared to some businesses where that would have never happened because women didn't have the opportunity
right.
to progress. And like, you know, being a loan producer, for example, as long as they brought in loans, that was okay. Yep. And so you just had it, you had more of an opportunity to show what you could do. And I did, and no doubt that I had to work harder, I had to work longer, I had to show results. And but on the other hand, I feel like I was given a great opportunity to build a career in this business, and it's been very good to me.
Well, I'm so grateful for you persevering through some of that and much of that, because you're now such a great leader and for our role model for those in our industry that are coming into the industry, the women that are coming up and into the industry. And one of my favorite movies is Hidden Figures. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I love that movie. It's just got such a redemptive theme and strategy about the three women that worked, the black women that worked inside of NASA. And you see what happened, especially when Mary Jackson, which was such a brilliant mathematician and engineer, and what she had to overcome was just so astounding. And I think, you know, to some degree, to varying degrees, that has been true in many industries and certainly in the mortgage industry. So kudos to you, Marilyn, for overcoming. I love that. Jason, as you watched your mom go through that, what are some of the things that you learned and some painful parts? There's got to be some times where it's just like, that's just wrong. It's so injustice. And talk about that and what you learned that you carry into your career and now planting in other people.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, growing up, you know, a lot of that stuff, you know, my mom was good at not really getting into the daily grind of the work and that type of stuff, even though, you know, there would be times where it was more obvious than not that that's kind of how it was. But, you know, what I noticed is more of just the work and then obviously health, you know, the toll that it takes on your health and your ability to do certain things. And so growing up in that type of environment, you know, again, I always go back to, you know, just like with any kid, I go back to what I learned just by watching, right? You know, it's part of what I did when I worked for Peter, just being a sponge and whatnot. But, you know, a lot of it is she, you know, my mom made it. Not that I don't think we've ever really had this conversation, but looking back, I would think that a lot of what my mom tried to do was not bring, you know, the work baggage home with her and what she was dealing with. But, you know, I would, as we had like company events and as a kid, you know, being a part of those and seeing the interactions and stuff like that, it clearly was, you know, looking back at it now, it's clearly like, oh, wow, that definitely is an old boys club. And even though, and Dave, you know, this is some people, especially when you're dealing with people that you have been in the industry a few decades that were back from, you know, those old times, that I will still be in some meetings or some conferences or whatever, and that still is somewhat kind of the mindset. I don't think
sadly.
I don't think it's like, you know, kind of like on purpose per se, but that's just kind of how they came up and that's what they did. And so, you know, getting like when she mentioned like getting coffee or something like that, that would be something like, you know, like with the Sweeties and the Deers and all that other stuff. So it's one of those things that you see that you notice that. And as I became older, you notice it. But, you know, I would say that my mom was really good at kind of, I don't want to say shielding us from it, but just at, you know, when she got home, try to do what she can to enjoy the family time and be with the family and do what she could as a mom. And then, you know, was work mode, then that's what she did. And again, I think even though part of my DNA, I think I've tried to learn a lot with that just with my own family and kids is try not when I come home and try to turn off that switch, which is incredibly hard for me to do, but turn off that switch and not bring in the baggage from work to let it interfere with the time you do have with your kids.
Marilyn, how did you do that? To realize that you're not only a caregiver to your mom, but you're a single mom raising children. I know how difficult that is. My wife's a stay-at-home mom and blessed to have very fortunately to have a very good marriage. And I know how much work it is for us to try to make everything. How did you do that? And then how did you put those borders up? Because there is, even though it's gotten better, there's still some of that out there. So what would you say to the younger crowd that's coming in?
Well, I think for me, although I was a caregiver for my mom, having her with me was also a blessing because she helped a lot at the house. Made sure, you know, she'd pick up my kids after work and she would help with the dinners and help with the laundry. And so even though I was supporting her, she was supporting us. I was supporting her financially. She was supporting us with love and support and, you know, all of those things. And it made my life easier. So that for sure was a real blessing for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
I think the other was kind of selfish because if I couldn't make that division, then I would lose out on the happy times with my children because times, because I did work, the times with them after work and on the weekends, very, very precious to me. And so I would, you know, try to think of special things to do with them, special things that only I would do that my mom wouldn't do. So, you know, I would have something special with them. So I always focused on that time as being separate and work, and not that I always succeeded, for sure. There were days when I would, you know, have a hard day at work and come home and, you know, be tired or irritated or whatever. So I wasn't always successful, but it was a priority with me to, my drive home from work was to take a deep breath, and I'd put on some music that was uplifting, and so that when I got home, it was just family time and everything else was behind me. And I think that you do have to make it a priority, that you do have to think about it, because it's not going to come natural, because we all come home tired no matter what kind of job you have. And so it just was important to me to have that, to build those special memories and have that special time with my children. And I didn't want to take away from that, from being burdened, you know, come home burdened with the troubles of the day.
That's awesome. Jason, do you remember a story that you could share with the audience where you just kind of stood back and go, wow, mom rocked? I mean, tell us one of those stories that just stand on your mind, if you can think of one. I'm sure you've got many.
Yeah, I was going to say there's quite a bit. I think, you know, if I had to choose, I would say one story is that, you know, going back to what she was talking about as far as like special, you know, just trying to do special things or trying to make things. I remember I had appendicitis, and I want to say I was probably, it was maybe like third or fourth grade, somewhere around there, when I had it. And you got to know that, see, growing up, someone like my mom, who works a lot and was at a very demanding business, and at that time, she was an executive at a pretty big company. And so growing up with that, and then also, you know, with her investments and everything else that she was doing, you know, she's pretty busy. And so when I had appendicitis, one thing that came out, and this isn't really one of those, you know, just like this was just amazing sort of thing. It was more what I remember as being something that, you know, when I had appendicitis and you're having surgery, and as a third grade, and if you guys remember like TV sitcoms back then, they didn't sugarcoat. It wasn't like the Snowflake Channel like it is today, when they try to make sure that nobody's afraid of anything, nothing bad happens, no feelings are hurt, right? Like everyone's very, very
so
politically
funny.
Correct. Now back then, when we were watching TV sitcoms, like kids were dying, and you know, like there, you know, surgery was a real thing, right? Like different strokes and other, when they had like their tonsils out or appendicitis. So like I was scared out of my mind. And so I would say that even with everything going on, she had to do with, you know, my grandmother and everything else in the family, because she's always been basically the rock of the entire family, not just, you know, her and, you know, my sister and myself and my grandma, but really my cousins and my aunts and uncles. She's, you know, she's definitely been, you know, even as the youngest child, been the rock of the family. And so, you know, when I was going through that and her dealing with everything she was dealing with, she made it very, she tried to do the best she could comforting me. And at that time, when I was a kid, I had, for some reason, I don't know why, but like, I've always wanted to ride in a limo. Like, limos were the thing for me. Whenever I saw a limo, I just imagined like how awesome it would be to ride in a limo. So as I was getting the news that I was, you know, going to have surgery and stuff, and, you know, and you could imagine, I mean, I could imagine it now as a parent who's gone through some pretty crazy stuff with my own kids as far as like medical conditions and stuff like that. And you, Dave, you know, you being a father, understanding like when your kid's like afraid, like it's hard, right? Like it's hard horrible to deal with when
you'd rather go through the pain, take it all 10 times on yourself more than they.
Exactly. And so, you know, that was where she, you know, she's like, well, you know, trying to comfort me and stuff. And then, you know, said, you know, as a, you know, just want to surprise you and let you know that we were going to go on a trip at some, I think to Hawaii or someplace. And just, she let us know that she had got a limo. the limo was going to take us to the airport, and then when we landed, the limo was going to pick us up and take us back home. So, you know, I know that's not like maybe a specific, like, mom did all these cool things and then like it was an awesome thing, but it was really, it's a testament to when you have to show, the reason that I remember, other than being like my first limo ride and I was like super amped by it, but it did, like, honestly, that did take, because that would probably be the one thing in the world at that time in my universe. Yeah. That would have taken my mind off of, you know, because in my mind, I'm like, well,
having to go through that surgery. Yeah.
I'm going to die or something like that. Right. You know, as a kid, you know, just going through like kid type thoughts and stuff like that. But it's really one of those things, looking back at it, even then, is just thinking about of all the weight on the world of a parent, and then not just forget everything else I said, but just think of just a parent that has a kid that has that surgery. But then, you know, factor in, you know, being in charge of a company, managing hundreds of people and being responsible to partners and financial stuff, and then having family that's depending on you outside of your immediate kids and stuff like that, you know, to still be able to not just function, but then function at a higher level, and then, you know, try to do what you can to help your child through something, you know, something at that time was the scariest thing the kid's been with. So I would say that would probably be one of many things that has stood out where, you know, she's done amazing stuff as a mom, but that would be one thing to where factoring everything in at that time, that would definitely be something that, that has stood out for me since, you know, obviously since, what was that, like 87?
That's awesome.
So, right. Well, so we're looking at 22, you know, or what, 30 years from then. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that shows the attention to detail, because you get, it's so easy to get so wrapped up in things and in our business and our careers. And just Marilyn, the fact that you showed the detail and the thought and the fullness to know what was it going to help Jason get through that. That was, that's just awesome. Marilyn, one of the things, the tips that you would share as we wrap this up to the young women that are coming up and in the business, that you would share with them that it would give them a edge up on a step up in their career into the mortgage industry, especially into the C-suite?
Mm-hmm. I think the main thing is just, you know, doing a good job. I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but there's just nothing that works, I think, for either men or women that is more important than paying attention to your job, doing your job well, and also respecting everybody. Even if somebody is disrespecting you in some way, don't take it to heart, you know, that it really isn't about you, it's about them. You know, it's something going on with them and some character flaw in them. And you just have to not let it derail you, because it's, you know, there are still some people in every industry that still sees women as being less than men. And you will see that. And so, but for me, I think that's it. And also giving back to me, when I see somebody who wants to progress in their career, I think, you know, making sure that you are a friend to them, that if, you know, if you share your knowledge with them, that also helps, because as you're helping others, you're helping yourself. You learn more. And I know I certainly did that as I was learning. I offered to help other people do things. So I learned from them. They learned from me. And, you know, you just kind of build different relationships with different people that have different skills. And that definitely has served me well, I know, in my career. And so I think all of that, all of those aspects are really important. And find a mentor. Surround yourself with people who really know the business, who, you know, are not out for their own gain, but, you know, enjoy helping other people, and surround yourself by those. And certainly people with positive attitudes, you know, don't get pulled down with the negativity, you know, with people, because, you know, you can always find things to bring you down or to be sad about or hurt about, or this life is not always fair. But as long as you push that aside, be true to yourself, always treat people well, but, you know, do what you're being paid to do as well as you can, I think the other will follow. And, at least it did. It did for me. So I did want to say one thing about Jason. I have to give away something.
Oh, I was going to say we got to have one Jason story.
Yeah, you got to have one Jason story.
Got to have really one good Jason.
Time to wrap it up.
And I think it was my first. I think it was my first indication that he was going to grow up to be a creative thinker, and we all know he loves to talk.
Oh, he is.
And we all know that he's full of ideas and he likes to share them.
Oh, he is. Yes.
But he's he won't get into like a lot of the paperwork and the detail and all of that. He wants to come up with the ideas, but, you know, let somebody else write them down. I mean, not that he's not a good writer. He really is. But mainly it's about his ideas that he writes about.
I relate to that.
So when he was in first grade, he came home. And I told him it was time to do his homework. And he said, well, you know, he came up with this really great idea because it's a lot faster just to say the answers. So if I would just ask him the questions, he would give me the answers, and that would save a lot of time. And he would not, you know, have to spend an hour or whatever writing it down.
Right.
And so what he was saying in first grade is that his life would be a lot easier if he had a secretary assigned to him to write down the answers that he gave. So
that is so funny.
That was my Jason.
That's your Jason. Well, we're just so grateful for both of you. And I love that story. We're gonna use that here a couple of times in future interviews with Jason. But Jason, you know, we can't close this out without talking about the Mortgage Syndicate and your podcast and all you're doing there. And we're going to give a last word to your mom to get a shout out about Mason McDuffie and how people can join it and how other women can connect with you, Marilyn. But let's talk about the podcast. Jason, give us a quick update.
Yeah, so, you know, right now I just actually recorded episode 40 of the Agent Marketer podcast, which I'm doing right now. And as you know, as you joined us, we at the end of last year, we created a podcasting, the Real Estate's First Media Network for podcasters and video producers and content creators, and which we call the Industry Syndicate, which Dave, you're a part of just as I am. And then, you know, recently I mentioned that at the beginning of the show is I just started a new podcast with Christine Beckwith, which is called the Mortgage X podcast, which is, you know, with the Agent Marketer podcast, I focus on everything that's, you know, like marketing, tech, you know, innovation, stuff like that for, you know, real estate mortgage professionals. The Mortgage X podcast, kind of going back to my roots of being, you know, born and raised in the mortgage industry, is focusing on those that are making this industry awesome. So the Mortgage X podcast, we're episode 5 comes out. So as this episode comes out, it would have came out last week, episode 5 with Casey Crawford, who's the CEO of Movement Mortgage. That comes out as the next episode. And so we've had Anthony Casa on. We've had Laura Brandeau, who has a lot of similar, you know, she used to work with her son as well. And she's the president of AFR Inc. We've had Kristen Meserly. We've had Clayton Collins, CEO of HousingWire. So it's been a great ride doing that. The Agent Marketer recently just joined forces with Shred Media. Our good friend Josh Pitts founded that company. So I've been doing that since the beginning of April. So Agent Marketer is now part of Shred Media. So that would be the big announcement that not a lot of people know about. I mean, we've mentioned it on live just recently, but we're doing that. And you know, we'll be both Josh and I will be speaking at Mortgage Mastermind in Las Vegas and partnering up with our good collective friend Barry Habib for MBS Highway, and so that's the update right now. Those are the things going on right now. I'm just very, very excited and blessed to, you know, everything that I'm doing, and this, you know, obviously this is something that will seem a little bit, you know, kind of to do with just because my mom is on the podcast right now, but she knows it's something I've said millions of times. I've said it on interviews and just recently with Laura Brandeau, but, you know, everything that I am doing right now in the mortgage business and what I've learned is, you know, the catalyst and genesis of that was my mom. And so, you know, everything that I have done and will continue to do is because of the family connection, because of being able to see this from an outsider's perspective, and then given the autonomy and the you know, the just the wherewithal to do that stuff. And I will, you know, because my mom shared a story, I want to share one, the funniest story, which happened basically the second week of me working for my mom at the mortgage company. And this is just a real quick funny story, is we were in a meeting, and before I joined the company, my mom was very concerned about, okay, I want to make sure that both of us were very concerned that it didn't seem like any type of nepotism, didn't seem like
right.
I was getting any favorable treatment, that everything was split. So she had me reporting to somebody else, as opposed, even though I should have technically been reporting to her, I was reporting to another, you know, executive at the company, which again was fine with me with what I was doing. And so the first, but I told her, you know, as she knew, I said, just so you know that, like, if you happen to say something that I disagree with, I will disagree with it. Like, that's not how I came up in my business relationships. It's part of who I am and whatnot. So it was the second week, and I don't know if my mom remembers this, but it was the second week we're having a manager's meeting. So it was me, it was myself, other senior level managers, like the underwriting manager, closing, everyone in a meeting. And we were talking about stuff, and she had mentioned that we should be doing something. And I said, well, you know, what we can't do, and this was more of just, and I was staying in my lane of technology and marketing and everything
right.
that I was doing. I said, you know, well, we can't do this. We have to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And she's all, but sweetie, we can't, you know, so she called me sweetie. So here we are trying to, you know, make sure that everything stays, you know, professional and whatnot. And so, and of course, in this meeting 2 weeks after I start, she calls me sweetie in front of all the managers. So it wasn't like, you know, just by calling me sweetie some of these managers I had,
yep.
My mom had mentioned that I had been, you know, coming to work as a kid.
Yeah, so they knew you already so well.
They knew
yeah.
me, but some of them had not, you know, did not know that. So
yeah.
for the next, like, month and a half, sweetie was basically kind of like the, you know, was the running joke of people calling me sweetie at the office.
So, hey, sweetie, what's the support desk doing
yeah,
for
exactly.
you? That's, oh, you could have all kinds of fun with that. That's a great story to end this on.
Yeah, so for everyone out there that's thinking about working with their mom, just be cognizant of that. Have the sweetie talk.
Yeah, be
that,
careful.
So. But even then, it'll probably slip out. So.
Yeah, that's so good. Marilyn, you run
that's
a great
true.
Company. Mason McDuffie has
oh,
been
you.
Around forever. How can people learn more about your company? Jay, we're going to put links on all of this on our website so we run this live. But how can people
okay.
learn more about your company and how to get a hold of you?
Well, if you have a link to our website, definitely do that. They can email me personally, especially if women out there have any questions for me. I'm always happy to answer and talk to any female who's looking to build a career in mortgage banking. They can email me at mrichardson@masonmac.com, and I'm happy to answer any questions at all. And we are growing, so, you know.
You're growing
like,
still.
Anybody, yeah,
amazing.
We're growing rapidly still, and so would love for anybody to look us up on our website. And again, if they have any questions, contact me personally.
That's awesome. Jason, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so everyone can either go to shredmedia.com. I have the link to the podcast there, or they could check me out at agentmarketerpodcast.com, and they'll have links to podcast, the Mortgage X, my newsletter, and then also the Agent Marketer Coaching Group.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for joining us on this special podcast honoring moms everywhere and sons who are creative and also look want to get into the mortgage industry. So thank you both so much there today.
Thank you, David.
Dave,
thank
thanks for
you.
Having us, man.
You betcha. You know, I have resisted the temptation to say, so talk to Jason at the end going, hey, sweetie, how could people get hold of you? I just didn't want to do that to him. That was too funny. Anyway, great interview. Thank you to all of our guests today. And again, to our last couple of guests here, Jason and Marilyn. Go back and share these podcasts with others that are in the industry. There again, they'll be up on our website, lickingonlending.com. It's good to have you with us, everybody. Appreciate you being here. Next week, we're going to have Brenda Clem joining us. She's Executive Vice President of Pavasos. And we're going to be talking about capital markets and blockchain. And we're looking forward to the special episode we'll have with them. So we'll be also at the Secondary Marketing Conference, and we'll be broadcasting from there on this important topic. A special thank you goes out to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, MBA, Lenders One, The Mortgage Collaborative, Velma, Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, and our newest sponsor, United Bank. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.